Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to break down complex topics into, well, something clear and usable. Today, we're really digging into a stack of research, our mission, to unpack cybersecurity for small and medium-sized businesses, SMBs, focusing on what's called defense in depth. You know, getting that enterprise-level thinking without the massive budget. And the sources, they paint a pretty stark picture. It seems 43% of cyber attacks, they're aimed squarely at smaller companies.
Yeah, that's a huge number.
But here's the kicker. Only about, what, 14% of those businesses feel adequately prepared.
Mm-hmm. And that gap between the threat level and the readiness, that's why the financial hit is so massive. We're seeing data showing the average cost of a data breach climbing to $4.45 million in 2023.
Wow.
Yeah. For an SMB, weathering something like that, it takes more than just, you know, a basic firewall. You need a real strategy.
And that strategy is exactly what we're focusing on today, this defense in depth idea. So let's nail it down. What does that actually mean? Building a digital fortress this way.
It's really all about layers.
Yeah.
Redundancy. Think about securing your house, right?
Okay.
You wouldn't just lock the front door and call it a day. You probably have window locks, maybe an alarm system, security cameras perhaps,
yeah.
A safe for valuables inside.
Right, multiple barriers.
Exactly. Defense in depth is just applying that same logic to your digital assets. It means using multiple overlapping security controls layers. So if, or really when, an attacker gets past one layer, the others are there, ready to block them, or at least detect them, slow them down, buy you time to react.
Okay, got it. Layers on layers. So let's unpack this blueprint. The goal for you listening is to really get a handle on these seven critical layers, how they interlock to turn your organization from, well, maybe a soft target into something much harder for cyber criminals to crack. Let's kick off where most attacks start.
All right.
Layer one, email security. You hear stats like what? 94% of all malware gets delivered via email.
It's staggering, isn't it?
Yeah.
94%. It's the number one attack vector, largely because it directly targets people.
But the human element.
Precisely. And modern email security. It's way beyond just basic spam filters now. You absolutely need advanced threat protection, things like sandboxing.
Sandboxing. Explain that a bit.
Sure. It means incoming attachments get opened and scanned in a completely isolated, safe virtual space. It checks if they do anything malicious, like trying to install malware before they ever land in the user's actual inbox.
Okay, so it detonates potentially bad stuff safely away from my network.
Exactly. And similar tech for links within emails, URL rewriting, or detonation. It checks the destination of a link in real time right when you click it to see if it leads somewhere harmful.
What about stopping those fake emails? You know, the ones pretending to be the CEO or the bank. Impersonation.
Yeah, crucial. That's where email authentication comes in. You need protocols like DMRS, SPF, and DKIM properly configured.
Right.
These basically act like a digital passport check. They verify that the server sending the email is actually authorized to send for that domain. It makes spoofing much, much harder. And don't forget data loss prevention, DLP. That scans outgoing emails to make sure sensitive data isn't leaking out, accidentally or otherwise, maybe enforcing encryption.
So, practically speaking, for an SMB owner listening, you need to ensure your system quarantines suspicious stuff automatically. Don't just rely on users spotting a warning flag.
Absolutely.
And regular phishing tests, right? To keep everyone on their toes.
Essential. Keep that human firewall trained and alert.
Okay, so let's say layer one, email security, fails. The attacker gets a foothold on a device. That brings us straight to layer two, endpoint protection. Every laptop, phone, tablet, especially with remote work.
Yep, the perimeter is everywhere now.
Yeah.
Every device is a potential door in.
And traditional antivirus. That's not enough anymore, is it?
Not even close. Old school antivirus just looked for known malware signatures, like a list of known criminals. But modern attacks, they're often fileless or zero-day, brand new, no existing signature.
Right, they slip right past.
Exactly. That's why the shift is to endpoint protection platforms, DPP, and even more advanced, endpoint detection and response, EDR.
EDR. What's the key difference there?
They don't just look for known bad files. They use AI, machine learning, behavioral analysis. They look for suspicious activity. Like, why is Microsoft Word suddenly trying to encrypt all your files? That's not normal behavior.
Ah, okay. It's looking at what the software is doing, not just what it is.
Precisely. That real-time behavioral monitoring is key. And the good news, this isn't just for giant corporations anymore.
So SMBs can actually use this stuff.
Definitely. Options like Microsoft Defender for Business, especially if you're already in the Microsoft 365 ecosystem, offer automated investigation and response. Or cloud-native platforms like CrowdStrike Falcon use global threat intelligence and advanced analytics for, you know, serious threat hunting capabilities scaled for smaller businesses.
Okay, so layer one email and layer two endpoint are breached. The attacker is inside one machine, now what? Layer three feels critical to stop one compromise becoming a total takeover, network security.
You nailed it. The big danger now is lateral movement.
Moving sideways through the network.
Exactly. Yeah. They use that first compromised machine like a beachhead. They scan around looking for other, maybe more valuable targets. Domain controllers, servers with financial data, admin workstations.
So how do we stop that spread?
Well, first you need a good firewall, but not just any firewall. Mm-hmm. A next generation firewall, an NGFW.
Okay.
These do deep packet inspection. They actually look inside the data traffic flowing through, not just at the source and destination ports like older firewalls.
Yeah.
They have intrusion prevention systems built in.
Gotcha. But you mentioned something else, DNS layer security.
Ah, yes. This is hugely effective and often kind of overlooked. Think of Cisco Umbrella as a prime example.
Okay.
It works at the DNS level. That's the internet's phone book. Before your computer even connects to a malicious website or a command and control server used by malware, Umbrella blocks that connection request right at the source. It often stops malware, especially ransomware, before it can even download its malicious payload or call home to the attackers.
So it cuts the call before it connects. I like that. And within the network itself, segmentation.
Absolutely crucial. You have to assume a breach will happen eventually.
Yeah.
So you segment your network into zones to contain the damage.
Like bulkheads on a ship.
Good analogy. Isolate your guest Wi-Fi completely. That's a must. Put IoT devices, cameras, smart thermostats, whatever, on their own separate network segment. They're often less secure.
Right.
And most importantly, create protected zones for your critical servers and data. Make sure regular user workstations can't just directly reach them without passing through strict controls.
Which leads us perfectly into controlling who gets through those controls. Layer 4, access control and identity management. We've secured the devices, the network pathways. Now it's about the people and their permissions.
This is where we really see that big philosophical shift, the move towards zero trust architecture.
Zero trust. Heard a lot about that. What's the core idea?
It basically throws out the old assumption, you know, the castle and moat idea, where everything inside the network walls was trusted by default.
Right. Trusted internal network.
Zero trust says, trust nothing, verify everything. Yep. Always. Every user, every device, every single access attempt needs to be verified continuously.
Okay, so how does that work in practice?
It boils down to three main principles. One, explicit verification. Always authenticate and authorize based on all available data points, user identity, location, device health, resource being accessed. Two, least privilege access.
Meaning?
Users get only the bare minimum permissions they need to do their specific job, nothing more. If a marketing person doesn't need access to financial records, they don't get it, period.
Makes sense. And the third?
Assume breach. You operate as if the attackers are already inside. So you segment access, encrypt everything, use analytics to spot threats quickly. It limits the blast radius if or when someone does get in.
Okay, if there's one takeaway here for listeners, it feels like multi-factor authentication, MFA, has to be non-negotiable.
Right. Oh. Absolutely mandatory on everything. Email, VPN, critical applications, cloud services, everything.
Because even if they steal a password.
Exactly. Stolen credentials become much less useful if the attacker can't provide that second factor, a code from an app, a fingerprint, a physical security key.
Modern options are pretty good now, too, beyond just SMS codes.
Yeah, authenticator apps, biometrics, hardware keys like YubiKeys, much more secure. And while MFA is vital for all users, we also need to talk specifically about privileged accounts. Admins.
Privileged Access Management. Or PMM, why the special focus?
Because those admin accounts, they are the crown jewels for attackers. Gaining admin rights often means complete control over the entire system.
Right, keys to the kingdom.
So PMM requires things like using separate dedicated accounts just for admin tasks. You don't browse the web or check email with your super user login. And ideally, you implement just-in-time access. So elevated privileges are granted only for the specific task for a limited time and then automatically revoked. No standing admin rights floating around.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, that whole section feels like moving from pure prevention towards resilience, which brings us nicely to layer five, data protection and backup. Because let's face it, even with all these layers,
Something can still go wrong. A sophisticated attack, a natural disaster, even just a major human error. Stuff happens.
and when it does, recovery is everything.
Exactly. This layer is all about business continuity. And the cornerstone here is the classic 3-2-1 backup rule. You still hear it cited everywhere because it works.
Refresh us on that.
Sure, it means keep at least three total copies of your important data. Store these copies on two different types of media, like, say, internal disk and external tapes or cloud storage. And crucially, keep at least one of those copies off-site, completely separate location.
Got it. 3-2-1. But modern ransomware, it specifically targets backups now, right? Tries to encrypt or delete them to force you to pay.
Oh, absolutely. That's a primary tactic, which is why backup strategies have had to evolve. We now talk about immutable backups.
Immutable, meaning they can't be changed.
Exactly. Backups that, once written, cannot be altered or deleted for a set period, not even by an administrator account that might have been compromised. It makes them ransomware resistant.
Okay, that's clever.
And also air-gapped backups. This means at least one backup copy has no persistent network connection to your live environment. Maybe it's tape stored offline or a cloud backup system architected so it can't be reached directly from the production network.
Physically disconnected, essentially.
Right. Makes it much harder for malware to find and destroy them. But here's the most important part.
Let me guess, testing.
You got it.
Yay.
None of this matters if you don't regularly test your restore procedures. Can you actually recover your systems and data from these backups within an acceptable time frame? You have to practice it. A backup you haven't tested is just hope, not a strategy.
Good point. And we should mention encryption here too, right? For data at rest and in transit.
Absolutely. Encrypting data on laptops, servers, in cloud storage, and during transmission ensures that even if data is intercepted or stolen, it's unreadable without the key.
Okay, moving on. Layer six. This one feels different. Security awareness training. We've got tech layers galore, but you said it earlier, the human element.
It's often the weakest link. Still, technology is essential, but it can't stop everything. Your employees are, frankly, both your greatest asset and potentially your greatest vulnerability. We need that human firewall.
So, what kind of threats do employees really need to be sharp on recognizing?
Well, phishing is still huge, obviously. Those emails or messages creating fake urgency, asking for credentials containing unexpected attachments. But it's also more sophisticated social engineering now.
Like what?
Voice phishing or phishing. Phone calls pretending to be IT support needing your password, or a vendor demanding an urgent payment change. Also, physical security basics, watching out for tailgating, where someone follows you into a secure area without swiping their own badge, not leaving sensitive papers out on desks. Basic stuff, but easily forgotten.
So how do we build what the sources call a security-first culture? It can't just be that boring annual training video nobody pays attention to.
No, definitely not. That model is broken. It needs to be continuous, integrated, think frequent, short micro-learning modules, 5 minutes on spotting phishing, 5 minutes on safe password practices, bite-sized, regular reinforcement.
Okay, keep it top of mind.
And you back that up with regular, simulated phishing campaigns. Send safe, fake phishing emails to your own staff.
And see who clicks. Doesn't that feel a bit punitive?
It shouldn't be. When someone clicks, it's not about naming and shaming. It's an immediate teachable moment. They get instant feedback explaining what the red flags were. It makes the training real tangible. It really helps embed vigilance.
Right, turn the mistake into learning. Okay, final layer, layer seven, continuous monitoring and management. Security isn't a set it and forget it thing.
Not at all. It's a constant process. You need eyes on the environment always. This is where you get into things like SIEM.
SIEM, security information and event management. Sounds complex.
It can be. Think of SIEM as like the central security dashboard or maybe air traffic control for your whole IT setup. It pulls in logs and alerts from your firewalls, endpoints, EDR, servers, authentication system.
Okay, collects all the data.
And then it applies correlation rules and analytics to spot patterns. An alert from one system might be noise, but correlating it with alerts from three other systems might reveal a coordinated attack pattern that you'd otherwise miss.
That sounds powerful, but maybe
Okay.
overkill for a small business. Do they really need a full SIEM?
That's a fair question. Implementing and managing a SOM effectively can require significant resources and expertise, which leads us to vulnerability management.
Which is?
Regularly scanning your system, servers, laptops, network devices for known weaknesses, missing patches, misconfigurations. It's like a regular health checkup for your IT. You find the problems, prioritize the riskiest ones, and fix them. Patch management is key here.
Okay, find the holes before the attackers do. But what about that 24/7 monitoring aspect of SIEM? If an SMB doesn't have a dedicated security team watching screens around the clock.
That's where Managed Detection and Response MDR services come into play.
MDR, so you outsource the monitoring.
Essentially, yes. MDR providers offer 24/7 monitoring, usually leveraging their own sophisticated platforms, often built on EDR and SIEM tech. They analyze alerts, investigate potential threats, and provide expert response and guidance when something bad happens. It gives SMBs access to enterprise-level security operations without the need to build an entire internal security operations center, or SOC.
That sounds like a very practical solution for many SMBs. Okay, we've covered the 7 layers in detail. Let's pull back for the strategic view. ROI. Why should a busy business owner invest potentially thousands a month in all this? It feels like a cost center.
It's easy to see it that way, but it's fundamentally an investment in resilience and continuity. It enables the business to operate safely.
So let's talk numbers. You mentioned the implementation cost. Maybe $500 to $3,000 a month for a typical SMB.
You know, depending on size, complexity, the specific tools chosen, it's a range. But compare that to the alternative. That average breach cost, $4.45 million.
Right.
That includes incident response, forensic investigation, legal fees, regulatory fines, reputational damage, lost business. The list goes on. The cost of prevention, even comprehensive prevention, is almost always far, far lower than the cost of recovery from a major incident.
So the ROI isn't just avoiding the huge breach cost. It's also about, well, staying in business.
Absolutely. But it's increasingly about more than just that. It's about compliance, too. If you handle customer data, regulations often mandate certain security controls. And cyber insurance.
Yeah, insurance is getting tougher, isn't it?
Much tougher. Insurers are now demanding proof of foundational controls like MFA, EDR, tested backups. Without them, you might not get coverage at all, or the premiums will be astronomical. Proactive security is fast becoming just the cost of doing business.
For businesses wanting to get started or measure where they are, the sources mentioned a couple of frameworks, NIST and CIS.
Right. Frameworks like the NIST Cybersecurity Framework, which organizes activities into identify, protect, detect, respond, recover, provide a great high-level structure. And the CIS controls are more specific, offering prioritized technical actions.
CIS controls, are those practical for SMBs?
Very much so.
Right.
Especially the first 6 controls. They cover fundamental cyber hygiene things like inventorying your hardware and software, secure configurations, controlling admin privileges, vulnerability management. If you just nail those first 6 CIS controls, you block the vast majority of common attacks that give you a concrete roadmap.
Okay, so there's a path. What would a basic implementation roadmap look like?
You typically start with assessment and planning, understand what you have, where the risks are. Then foundation building is critical. Get MFA everywhere, implement that solid 3-2-1 backup system, get good endpoint protection.
Get the basics right first.
Exactly. Then move to advanced protection. Bring in things like network segmentation, DNS security, continuous monitoring, maybe via MDR, and structured security awareness training. Mm. And finally, optimization and maturity. Ongoing audits, regular testing, refining your processes. It's a continuous cycle.
That's a fantastic overview. We've covered a lot of ground today, really digging into those 7 layers. Email security, endpoint protection, network security, access control, data protection, security awareness training, and continuous monitoring. Hopefully for you listening, this gives you a much clearer picture of how these pieces fit together to build real resilience.
It's about creating that layered defense where failure in one area doesn't mean game over. And as you think about implementing this, particularly layer 5 on data protection, here's a final thought to chew on. We talked a lot about backup.
Mm-hmm.
What's the really crucial difference between simply having a backup and having true disaster recovery? They aren't quite the same thing.
Backup is just having the copies of the data stored somewhere safe, right? Like the 3-2-1 rule.
Yeah.
Correct. Backup is about preserving the data itself. Disaster recovery, however, is the much broader plan. It includes the backups, yes, but also the documented procedures, the infrastructure, the resources, and the tested ability to restore your entire business, operation systems, applications, connectivity, everything back to a functional state within a specific acceptable time frame after a major disruption.
So backup is the Disaster recovery is the how and how quickly for the whole business.
Exactly. One ensures your data exists, the other ensures your business can actually use that data to operate again. Knowing that difference and planning for true recovery is often what separates businesses that survive a major incident from those that don't.
A critical distinction indeed. Something vital to consider as you build your defenses. We hope this deep dive has been valuable. Thanks for joining us.